inside, come inside.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening to A Summer Goodbye all this hour. To Greg Lake, we'll be hearing his music. He died of cancer at the age of 69. He was of Emerson, Lake & Palmer and the band King Crimson. And since we are the show that's on all the time, what does it take to govern a country? Ever thought about that? We never stop thinking about it. The ingredients? You need the power to collect taxes. You need the power to enforce laws. That's police power, most of all. And really, the basis of all that is a belief in the system itself. From people's faith in the system, that their money is valuable, that one vote is counted in a free and fair election, to the faith that police are enforcing laws equally. All of that is eroded when things happen like Hillary Clinton's winning the popular vote on November 8th, a count that currently stands at 2.7 million. It also happened back in 2000. Al Gore lost to George W. Bush, even though he won the popular vote by little more than 540,000 votes. Perhaps nothing shows a lack of mandate, though, or an eroding faith in the system nationally better than when you look at the huge number of people who didn't vote at all. Does Donald Trump have a mandate to govern? Can anyone in this environment? Would changing the Electoral College help this? Who is representing the millions more who voted for Hillary? Is there a point where a country, this country, becomes ungovernable? Wakefield, Massachusetts gave us one of the revolutionary suggestions we've been soliciting from you all week. We should have a national civic app for voter registration, voting, jury duty, etc. It would revolutionize civic life with accessibility.
My name's Paul. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. We instituted auto voter enrollment here and also have been voting by mail for years. Both systems seem to work really well, and I would like to see them rolled out nationally. Beyond that, you could impose national mandatory vote, as is done in Australia.
Newton Minow is an American attorney. He's vice chair of the Commission on Presidential Debates. He's a former chair of the Federal Communications Commission. And here's what President Obama said about Newton Minow at the ceremony last month.
Public interest. That's been the heartbeat of his life's work. Advocating for residents of public housing, advising a governor and a Supreme Court justice, cementing presidential debates as our national institution, leading the FCC.
The president also revealed that Minow happened to be present for President Obama's and First Lady Michelle Obama's first date. They went out to a movie, none of that staying home and watching the wasteland of television with Newt Minow around. More on that later. But first, Newt Minow says there's a great deal of work to be done in America. When millions of people don't vote, millions more can't find a candidate that's likable, and we now have millions who voted for a winner who was not ultimately deemed a winner. A candidate upgrade is what he would institute first.
I am very critical of our system of primaries. If you added up all the votes that both Mr. Trump and Hillary Clinton got in the primaries, all the votes, they would amount to less than 10% of the American eligible voters, less than 10%. And you ended up with an election in which the majority of the American voters said, we don't like either candidate. Many of people voted against rather than for. And so we really have, if you believe in democracy, you should find, we've got to find ways for more people to participate in the democratic process.
At what point, though, does America become ungovernable?
Well, I think the Congress has become ungovernable in the last 10 years or so. I blame the primary system. I blame too much money in politics. I blame, and to some extent, the media for fostering and emphasizing conflict rather than those who are in the center who want to make compromises. So it's a lot of factors involved, but certainly it's not a very satisfactory system at the moment.
If we were to go back and seriously address the question of the Electoral College, is it the case, as you view the law, that the Electoral College has evolved away from this kind of landowners-only club into a system which a lot of people in rural America think was supposed to protect their vote so that they wouldn't get overwhelmed by the cities? Is that the reason we think we have the Electoral College today versus what it was originally intended for?
The Electoral College was a compromise in the beginning to protect the smaller states, and also some scholars believe to protect slavery. It was a way to bring disparate views of the different 13 states in the beginning to reach a compromise. Today, I believe if we were starting all over again, we wouldn't have the Electoral College because we would count the national vote as determinative rather than the votes of a certain number of states. And if we're going to have a national election, we should not have the system of an Electoral College. And this is the second time in a few elections where the majority of the people voted for the candidate who lost the presidency.
So do we want to preserve that illusion that the Electoral College gives that rural votes are important, and we wouldn't want to lose that if we get rid of the Electoral College?
No, we want to keep everybody. We believe that everybody should have an equal vote, and that people in the smaller states, particularly in the western states, should not have more votes than those people who live in the big states.
But would that argue for doing something like after a particular number in California and New York and Texas, the big population states, or Florida, that you stop counting at a certain point, that above a certain level you don't count anymore, that which would preserve some sense of the importance of places like West Virginia and New Hampshire and New Mexico?
Well, what happens now is that candidates don't even campaign nationally. Their managers who study the numbers say you go to this state, don't go to that state. You pick a few states that are called battleground states where the campaigns exist and ignore the rest of the country, which is not treating people equally.
So we've created a system that's going to give us this result again and again and again, it sounds like you're saying.
Well, what I've been reading lately, because there's now been a good deal of publicity and analysis, is that Alexander Hamilton in The Federalists really argued the case for the Electoral College, and I understand was really in some ways an anti-democratic argument. As the country has grown and is now country of 320 million people spread out over thousands and thousands of miles, we've got to find a different way. And I go back also to the primary system. We've got to find a way to have more people participate in choosing the candidates as well as voting in the general election.
So would you say that among the things to do tomorrow to bring more people into the process would be scrap the primary process and eliminate the Electoral College?
The problem is nobody can figure out a better alternative than the primary process, at least not so far. I've even thought that perhaps we need three parties, not two, that we need one party on the right, one party on the left, and one party in the center. And I think that the parties have to rethink their basic principles because the differences have become so severe.
You've suggested that the Congress right now is already ungovernable. Certainly the House is by virtue of the redistricting process, is presumed to be Republican unless things radically change in the United States. Based on the demographics of the United States, it's easier to get a Democratic majority in the Senate than it is to get a Republican majority in the Senate. And now you've got the Supreme Court, which has moved from a nonpartisan, you know, legal think tank, shall we say, arbiter of issues, to being this 5-4 divided court on liberal conservative. How worried are you that we are creating partisan institutions, not a shared set of institutions to come together and to exercise mandates and a sort of shared vision of the future?
Well, this is where I think the press has a job to do in the next few years of getting these issues, these questions that you're raising with me, getting them debated and thought about and analyzed throughout the country. We're in the 21st century, and we're dealing with a bunch of concepts which no longer seem to fit the needs of the people.
Newton Minow, you wrote in an absolutely irresistible piece about witnessing the Obama's first date You showed up at a movie theater in Chicago, and summer intern Barack Obama was taking Michelle Robinson out for their first date. You remember the movie you went to see?
The movie was Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing. My wife, Jo, and I love the movies, and we went to a neighborhood theater. To our surprise, at the popcorn stand, there were Barack and Michelle. And because Michelle was Barack's supervisor, she was very embarrassed. She felt she shouldn't be dating somebody who was she was in charge of in the office. And I could see she was concerned about it. So I said, forget it. Enjoy the evening. Have a good time. And the other day when I got the Medal of Freedom, when I walked in and saw Michelle, she ran over and gave me a hug, and she pointed to the president. And she said, see what you got me into? I did the right thing by getting them together.
Absolutely. Newton Minow, thank you so much.
Thank you, John, and good luck to you with your continue doing what you're doing.
Thanks so much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.